Magical word.
Thank you. And really, I want to thank the organizer for organizing such an exciting week of talks. And it's really nice to see everyone and this for the discussions. And thank you for coming to the last session. I know it's been a very exciting but also exhausting week. So hopefully, I'll be telling you about something interesting. This work, I put in this title here, it's Fracton Topological Order, but I understand that there are a lot of discussion about whether this is a suitable name or whether we should put topological here or we should put something else here. But let me just, so bear with me for the title, and I'll be very explicit about what I mean and what we know and what we don't know about this set of models. So this is a rather new topic, I would say, or a revived topic. And I've had the luck of working with some very ingenious collaborators. So Han Ma is a graduate student at CU Boulder. And Ethan Lake is an undergrad working with us and now a graduate student at MIT. And Mike Hermley is at CU Boulder, and Wilbur is my student at Caltech. So we have put up one paper on the archive earlier this year, and we have another paper in the writing. And I'll also be talking about something that we haven't written up yet, but we have some extra thought about this. So I think I'll just put it out and maybe get some more input and feedback from the audience. All right. So this story actually started with the second speaker of this session, Zhou Wen Han. And Zhou Wen discovered this exotic model back when he was at Caltech in 2011, which was supposed to be a model for quantum memory. So the idea is that if we one day have a quantum computer, then we would want to have something like a hard drive where we can store information without actively correcting for it. So the request is to find a quantum model where we can store information for a long time without worrying about the information store being destroyed by all the noise coming from the environment. So this is the model that Zhou Wen came up with. It is a three-dimensional model on a qubit lattice, and there are two qubits per each lattice site. And these cubes that I draw here, they are individually the Hamiltonian terms involving the model. So this is one term, and this is the other term. So here the z and x, they're poly x and poly z according to the usual quantum information notation. So you can see that each term is a tensor product of eight qubits, eight poly operators. And here is as well, it's eight sigma x operators. And the total Hamiltonian would be a sum of all these cubic terms over all the cubes in the model. So this looks terribly complicated, and I had no idea what it would do with this kind of Hamiltonian, but Zhou Wen had a nice way of investigating the properties, and what he showed, amazingly, is that once you try to make excitations in the model, the excitations look very differently than what we're used to. So for example, if you act on this model with a single sigma z or sigma x, try to make some excitations to violate some of these Hamiltonian terms, you find that you create four excitations and which are located on the vertices of a tetrahedron. So that's step one. And more amazingly, if you try to move away the point excitations on the vertices of the tetrahedron, what you need to do is to keep stacking all these tetrahedrons. So you take one tetrahedron and you stack another one here, cancel this one at the vertex, but move all the other excitations further away. But if you want to keep a whole system to have four excitations and keep separating the excitations away from each other, you end up having to apply an operator which takes this shape, and this is a fractal-shaped operator. So this is something we've never seen before in all the other condensed matter models that we know. Basically, in all the other models, we know we can make point excitations, but then we can separate them using a string-like operator. But here we have to separate them with a fractal-shaped operator, and this is the first model we know now with this kind of property, and that's basically what makes it a good quantum memory. So this is shocking, and on the other side, it's also totally weird and doesn't speak any physics. So I'm putting here this formula that Johan had in one of his papers about the ground state degeneracy. I'm not trying to ask you to look at the formula, I'm just trying to show you how shocked I was when I learned about all these exotic properties. You can see this is a big formula and even only works between L larger than 2 and smaller than 200. So if we think about the difference between Johan's code and the so-called qubit code and all the other 3D point excitations, we'll see that they are very, very different. On the one hand, usually we consider point particles like electron or anions, and they're free to move. They can move anywhere in space, but for these kind of particles, if you just want to take one and try to move it, it's not possible. You can only separate four of them altogether, so their motion, they have to go into this coordinated motion, which means that individually, one of the excitation not free to move. On the other hand, in the usual 3D anions, they're free to move because they appear at the end of strings, and the strings are they're allowed to fluctuate and they're allowed to extend it without costing too much energy. But in Johan's code, these point excitations, they appear at the corner of a tetrahedra, which means that if you want to separate them, you have to apply this gigantic operator. And what's worse is that in the intermediate step of applying this gigantic operator, you might need to violate a lot of energy. So this whole process of going from excitations altogether, from excitations separated very far away from each other, you need to go across a very high energy barrier. And that's basically one special property which makes Johan's code a much better quantum memory than all the other models, because the excitations, if they want to move and destroy the quantum information stored in the model, you have to overcome an energy barrier. And Johan was able to show that the energy barrier actually scales as log of the distance between the excitations. So there would be significant thermal fluctuations for the usual models with just anions, but in this qubit code, the thermal fluctuations will be suppressed, giving rise to a better quantum memory. Okay, so this is all very nice, and there has been extensive study on the property of this model as to how it might behave as a quantum memory. But to me, the question is, what is this model? So this is not just a question mark here, but also an exclamation mark here, because I have no idea how to think about it. And what do I mean by what is it? Basically, I was trying to understand why, where all these exotic property of this fractal model come from, or if I try to stand in a physics point of view, what is the origin of all these fractal-shaped operator and energy barrier and all that? And secondly, is it related to things that we already know? So this is something that we always try to do, that we connect new models to the old models that we feel comfortable with. And just by looking at Haas code, I have no idea. And because in three dimension, we know a bunch of models like toric code or some other things, or gauge theory, but this looks nothing like it. So the question is, can we relate it to something we already know? And also, how to generalize this model, whether we can make new models that has similar or slightly different properties. So Johan and Benny Yoshida have been able to make a large class of model that works like this, that with fractal-shaped operators and extensive energy barrier. But I guess the question is, can we do even a larger, or even more broader generalization, so that we can have we'll be able to answer questions like whether we can have higher energy barrier or lower energy barrier. Can we continuously connect to the case where we have no energy barrier at all, so just separating the two point excitations with a string excitation, with a string operator? And finally, oh yeah, this is already, I already mentioned that. Are there similar models with more or less exotic properties like this? So this is what I mean by the question of what is it? So basically, after Jovan proposed this model, I've been staring at it, I've been hearing about it, going to talk, but I have no idea if there's any way to answer all these questions. But something happened more recently. So basically, Jovan moved to MIT and started collaborating with Liang Fu, and they came up with a bunch of new models. So here I'll show you a few of the models that they wrote in their 2015 paper. One of them is called the X-Cube, which is again a model for qubits on a square lattice. And these are the Hamiltonian terms that you sum over and get this so-called X-Cube model. So there will be a tensor product of 12x around a whole cube. That's one term. And then on all of the crosses, you have the tensor product of 4z's and sum over all the crosses in three planes. So this is one. And there are some others. For example, this so-called checkerboard model, where you have, again, qubits on a cubic lattice. And the Hamiltonian terms involves a tensor product of 8 sigma x or 8 sigma z over around a whole cube. And then you sum them over. And actually, there was something already discovered in the literature, but I haven't paid so much attention to it, which is something discovered by Claudio Chamoun back in 2005. So this is another model which has some similar properties. I'll say what a similar property is, but it looks like it's a qubit model on an FCC lattice. And on FCC lattice, whenever you see a structure like this, you put a Hamiltonian term of XX, YY, and ZZ. Okay, so all these models, and they're nice because they belong to the so-called class of stabilizer Hamiltonian, which the Jovan's model also belong to, meaning that all the Hamiltonian terms commute. So supposedly we can exactly solve for the ground state and investigate its properties to a great extent. On the other hand, they're beyond what we know in terms of three-dimensional topological order. Usually, in terms of three-dimensional topological order, we know there are gauge theories. We know there can be gauge charge, there can be gauge flux. The charge and flux can go around each other and generate a Hausdorff-Bohm effect. But all these models, they are topological, and that's the sense I use topological in the title. They're topological in the sense that they have certain ground state degeneracy which you cannot split with local operators. So all these models, if you put it on, say, cubic lattice, periodic boundary condition, they will have some ground state degeneracy. And the ground state degeneracy cannot be removed by just adding local operators. So in that sense, we call all these set of models topological. But on the other hand, they're nothing like a toric code or some gauge theory models. So basically, there's some common properties. One is, of course, this topological property that the ground state degeneracy cannot be lifted by local perturbation. And also, the degeneracy, in some sense, has a scaling with system size that if you take the log of the degeneracy, or if you ask how many qubits, how many logical qubits can I encode in the ground space, that scales with the system size roughly in a linear way. Okay, so and that applies to all of these models. And finally, they are similar to Haas model in the sense they have point excitations that does not move really in 3D space. So this is the biggest difference with, for example, 3D toric code, where we know that the point excitation, the gauge charge, they are allowed to move anywhere you want. But here, for all the models that I showed before and also Haas code, they have point excitations that have restricted motion. And Liang Fu came up with the name of fractals, And I think there's effort to change this name, but not so successfully. So if anyone has a better idea. Because this name is already used to describe something totally unrelated. But up to now, this has been the most catchy name for this set of models. Basically, to describe the fact that there are point excitations that does not move freely. All right, so by looking at these set of models, they seem to speak much more physics than Haas code. Even though there's still all these stabilizer code, but they somehow they look more familiar to me and maybe to Mike Kermely and some other people working in this field, and just feeling that maybe this would allow us to connect whatever is happening out there with Haas code and back to what we already know in three dimension. So maybe Haas code is out there, and then there are some less exotic faces, all these X-cube and checkerboard model, which allows us to get a more systematic understanding of the phase diagram of whatever is happening here in terms of three-dimensional topological systems. So basically, the goal is twofold. So on the one hand, we're trying to have a better understanding of topological phases in three dimension. And secondly, maybe this will allow us to, once we have a better understanding of the physical mechanism, maybe it will allow us to get a better model to realize quantum memory, because as you have seen, Jovan's model involves 8-body interaction, which is a gigantic interaction. And if we can simplify that, maybe we'll make quantum memory more feasible. So there have been a lot of attempts, people coming from all different perspectives trying to say something about these models. So Saka Vijay, Zhou Wan, and Liang Fu, in the paper where they, or in the second paper after they discussed the existence of all these models, they proposed a generalized gauge theory, which is to say that you take a classical model, basically Hamiltonians with only sigma z's, and then you can gauge it in a more general way if the system has some subsystem symmetry and put in gauge fields, and then realize all these fractal models as a certain version of generalized gauge symmetry, gauge theory. So that's their approach. And people from here, Tim and Halas, they come from the parton construction perspective, and not only with free fermions, but with partons of interacting fermions, and they were able to reproduce a lot of the phases that I showed on the previous slides. So we did this couple layer construction, and also Saka Vijay had a very similar paper on how to think of these things from the couple layer construction, which I'm going to tell you more about in the rest of the talk. And there were also these couple chain constructions by people here. This higher rank gauge theory is something I also plan to tell you about. This is basic due to Michael Preckel, who's in the audience here, who came up with this very nice idea that starting from higher rank gauge theory, we might have a very easy, simple understanding of why these point particles might not be able to move freely, why their motion are restricted. And also, there are people studying the glassy dynamics, because all these point particles, if they have restricted motion, then it would take longer time to relax. So basically, that leads to some glassy dynamics. And also, there are a bunch of papers studying the entanglement perspective and talk about topological entanglement entropy. And very recently, Kevin Slagle and Yongbak Kim came up with this field theory perspective and trying to come up with a field theory description of some of these models. And finally, we have this, recently we have this idea about how to do RG on this set of models and maybe use it as a more concrete way to say what is a fractal topological order and what is it that we want to study. So this is basically what I know about what's happening regarding fractal topological orders. So please do let me know if I left anything out. I'll be very happy to learn about that, because then it means the literature in this field is exceeding my memory. Not memory of my computer, just my brain. Okay, so I'll try to tell you a little bit about the couple layer construction and the higher rank gauge theory, and also this RG perspective of fracton topological order. So I was trying to decide whether I should tell you about all of them, because I only have half an hour. But I think at this point in the study of fracton phases, I don't feel there's one approach that everyone should take. It's more like everyone coming from different perspective and say this and say that, and maybe we combine all these things together, and it may be different approach give us different inspiration, and we put them all together, we can come up with a more systematic way to think about all these. So that's what I decided to do, even though I only have 10 minutes left. So I'll try to first talk about a little bit the couple layer construction. So the couple layer construction, the basic idea is that the previous properties that I mentioned, that the degeneracy scales as exponential in the linear system size, that has that can be also reproduced in a very simple system. For example, if we just stack two-dimensional layers of topological states, and with this simple stacking, we can get a degeneracy scaling like just like that, right? Because each layer would give us a finite degeneracy, and if we take a stacking, the degeneracy will scale like this. And also, it has point excitations that doesn't move freely in 3D space, because they're constrained to move in all the two-dimensional planes. So even with a simple model like this, we can reproduce some of the features of which we talk about when we say fracton phases. But then the question is, of course, all these other models, they're definitely not pure stacking. You can see in their properties that they have more exotic things than just stacking 2D phases. But then the question is, are they related? Can we think of it as starting from this decoupled layers and then try to put in coupling in some way and couple the excitations such that they reproduce the features in, say, for example, the X-cube model? So the X-cube model turns out to have excitations only move in one dimension, and also excitations that moves as the corner of a rectangle. So one way we try to imagine how this could happen, starting from just 2D layers, is to take the toric code. So toric code, I assume everyone is familiar with, that we can have E particle, we can have M particle, and they go around each other, and giving you a minus one phase factor. So if we take toric code, and we make a stacking of it, but not just stacking in one dimension, in one direction. We have stacking in all three directions. So we make a cubic lattice of all these toric-coded layers. So it's a three stacks of toric-coded. And then we put in some coupling along the intersection lines. So we somehow seal together all the intersecting layers by introducing this coupling. And basically what this coupling does is to create an excitation loop. So this coupling, it will make two excitations in the same plane. So two excitations in the horizontal plane and two excitations in the vertical plane. And if we think of these excitations as small sticks sticking out of the plane, then we can connect them together and make a loop. So what this this coupling does is to create loops. And when you push this coupling to a very strong coupling limit, then what happens is that these loops are everywhere. So we have small loops here, small loops there, and they connect into bigger loops. And this is basically a loop condensate. Okay, but this is very different from the usual loop condensate that we talk about in a three-dimensional topological phase, because they're loop condensate which we get from decoupled layers of 2D systems. And once the loop condensate, then we can understand why the motion of the original anion particles have to be restricted. Because if we take a single E particle from the toric-coded model, it will go around one of the loop and generate a minus one phase factor, which is something that won't be allowed if you have a condensate of loops. So a single E particle will be confined. But we can correct for that by taking two E particles together. So two E particles will be fine. But two E particles, because they're coming from two different intersecting planes, then what happens is that they can only move along the intersection line of the two planes. And that's why, basically why, this X-cube model have these one-dimensional particle. On the other hand, because we have condensation of these m flux loops, then if you have m excitation, then the intermediate part of the m excitation, it vanishes. You can't see that. The only point where you can have excitation is at the end of the flux strings, and that's where you see the excitation. But of course, the flux strings, they always come in pairs, so that's why we always have four excitation, and they appear at the corner of a rectangle. So that's the other species of excitation in the X-cube model. So using this couple-layer construction, we have a physical understanding of why it has a 1D, one-dimensional particle and also this corner of rectangle kind of excitation. So this has already a very nice application where Kevin Slingo and Yongbak Kim came up with a two-body Hamiltonian for realizing this X-cube, because the X-cube originally involves a 12-body interaction, which is gigantic. But they came up with a way on this interesting lattice by using only two-body interaction to show that we can already realize the same physics as in the X-cube model. So next to the higher rank gauge theory, the higher rank gauge theory is basically a very nice insight from Michael Pratko, where he pointed out that usually we think of rank one gauge theory, where we have electric field and a magnetic field, and we have Gauss law, which constrain the divergence of electric field to the charge density. And because of this Gauss's law, the charge has to satisfy this conservation law of charge conservation. So the total charge in the total Hilbert space has to be zero. But if you go to higher rank, if you go to higher rank and think of tensor, I think of gauge fields as tensors, which has two spatial labels, and both for the E field and the A field, then what can happen is that we can have more general forms of Gauss's law. For example, if we have a rank two gauge field, we can have two derivatives in front of the electric field so that this whole thing is equal to the charge density. So with this modified Gauss's law, a very simple modification, then correspondingly, the conservation law of the charge changes. So what Michael was able to show is that not only the total charge has to conserve, the total dipole has to conserve as well. So this will highly constrain the motion of the charge in the space, because let's say if we have only charge conservation, then we are free to pop up a positive charge and negative charge, and they can freely move away from each other, right? So for each individual particle, their motion is not restricted. But if we have dipole conservation, we cannot just pop up a pair of positive charge and negative charge, because that's creating a non-zero dipole. What we have to do is to create a positive dipole here and a negative dipole there. And if you want to keep the total dipole zero configuration, you have to separate them together, right? If you separate the top two, you have to separate the bottom two. And that's why these individual charged particles, they have to separate as the corner of a rectangle. And just like what happens in the X-cube model. Michael was able to show that the charges in a rank two gauge theory, the gapped excitations in the rank two gauge theory, they're fractons. And of course, there are also gapless photon modes, because these are U1 gauge theories. They're gapless modes at low energy. These are not exactly the same as the X-cube model that we talked about just before. And that's a qubit model, which is totally gapped. So in order to make connection from whatever Michael was talking about to this X-cube model, what we did with Han and Mike Hermele, which is appearing soon, is to add some Higgsing term. So basically doing a very similar thing as Higgsing a usual rank to, usual vector gauge theory down to a discrete gauge theory. So if we can Higgs it with a star by adding some more constraints, we'll be able to get the S-cube model. So what's nice about this particular perspective of high rank gauge theory is that this provides a way to think about some of these fractal models in a continuum space way. Because a lot of concerns or criticism I hear about all these study of fractal phases is because all these models, they're defined on cubic lattice, say, or a particular lattice. So it seems that they're highly lattice dependent, and it's not exactly clear how to directly generalize all these constructions to different lattices. So that's why this higher rank gauge theory gives us a particularly nice perspective, because it starts in the continuum space. It's a continuum description using these U1 fields, and then by Higgsing, then we can put it on a lattice and make it discrete. So potentially, for example, we can take this rank 2 theory and Higgs it to different lattices, not just the cubic lattice, but some other three-dimensional lattices. Then we would have a notion of saying how to define the same X cube model but on different lattices, so that they belong to the same phase. So that's something we're still currently working on. So finally, if I can steal a few more minutes, I want to tell you about this renormalization group perspective on fractal models. So this is basically an attempt trying to answer this question of what is a fractal phase? Because basically what we know right now in terms of fractals is that we know a bunch of examples. We know Haskell, we know the X cube model, we know the checkerboard model. We refer to them as the fractal order, but it's not exactly clear what we mean by a phase. Right? So, for example, we can ask the question of which part of the property is universal, which part is just special to a particular realization of the model, or which part is actually the universal property that we should expect for whatever model defined in this phase. And secondly, how much of the story is lattice dependent, which I already mentioned. And moreover, what is the criteria for saying that two models have the same fractal order and belong to the same phase? We have no criteria for saying. We don't know how to answer questions like this. If you give me two models, for example, the checkerboard-Chamans model or the X-cube model, and ask me whether they belong to the same phase, I don't even know where to begin to answer this question. We did have some criteria for saying two Hamiltonians belong to the same phase. We used to say, okay, if H1 is gapped and H2 is gapped, if we can connect them with a gapped path in the Hamiltonian, and they belong to the same phase. And that has always been the criteria that we use to describe a gapped phase. And moreover, we can show that this actually translates into a local unity transformation between the ground states. If we have ground state of H1 and ground state of H2, we can use local unity transformation to connect them. And in the process of connecting them, we can even do this for system with different system size. For example, if we have a smaller system, we want to connect to a bigger system, what we can do is to throw in some degrees of freedom, basically. But we ask the degrees of freedom to be in a product state when we throw them into the system. And then we can do local unitary or change the Hamiltonian without closing gap and take one system to the other. So this is the usual definition of what a gapped phase means. And that leads to a renormalization group transformation for these gapped phases. So basically, if we want to, say, enlarge the system size by 2, then what we do is to start from a smaller system size and throw in these product states and decoupled degrees of freedom, and then apply local unitary transformation and get the same state on a larger system size. What happens, of course, in this process is that the ground state degeneracy does not change because you throw in some product states. And of course, because of that, it doesn't cover fractals. So for fractals, we would need a more general way to define what a gapped phase is and to define how we do renormalization group transformation. And a very naive idea is to think about all these decoupled layers. If we have a decoupled layer and we want to increase the number of layers by a factor of 2, what we need to do is to throw in all the extra layers, right? And then we do some local unitary transformation. Of course, here it's just trivial, and get a larger system size. So this just implies the idea that maybe if we want to talk more systematically about fractal phases or RG transformation on fractal systems, we need to allow to throw in two-dimensional topological states as free resources when we do local unitary transformation, not just product states. So we have tried to do this for a few of the models. For example, if we take one of the fractal models, we throw in some two-dimensional topological states, sometimes it's the torical state, and do local unitary transformation, we get a bigger system size. And we have been successful with the X-cube model and checkerboard model, and we're still working on all the other ones. And this makes a very good connection back to the story by Brian Swingle and John McGreevy, where they propose this S-sorcery idea for renormalization, where they say the renormalization doesn't have to take just one copy of the system and make it larger. You can put in more resources. And here, we have one fractal faces. If we want to do renormalization, we're throwing away all these 2D topological layers. And the 2D topological layers, of course, if you do renormalization, they become two copies of itself. And this is exactly the same rule that's followed by Haas code, as shown in his paper in 2014. Of course, in Haas code, the B system that's thrown in is not just decoupled two-dimensional topological layers. It's much more complicated model. So that maybe is a way to show more concretely what is different between Haas code and all the other fractal models. So let me skip this, but just to come to the open questions that still remains. Of course, there are tons of questions remains, but let me just mention a few questions regarding this renormalization scheme, whether this idea applies in general, whether we can find a way for it to work for all the fractal faces that we are studying, and also how this RG process may be related to the existence of fractal, and in particular, when people have this notion of type 1 and type 2 fractal faces, basically Jouan's code or anything that involves a fractal structure logical operator are referred to as type 2. And all the other ones which doesn't involve this fractal structure I refer to as type 1. So maybe the difference is can be more rigorously defined as when we do this RG scheme, whether we can just throw in two-dimensional decoupled layers or we need something more exotic in order to do the RG process. Okay, so I'm already out of time, so that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Xu, for the great talk. Are there any questions?
Yeah, the story of a higher rank gate symmetry and fractons, does that generalize to higher dimensions and higher rank gauge symmetry?
Sorry, you were asking whether the story between higher rank gauge theory and fractons generalize to even higher.
What happens if you consider higher dimensions and higher rank gauge symmetry? Do you get some similar exotic excitation? Or?
Yeah, I was hearing from Michael the other day that there was generalization to five dimensions. Then you can have, or someone else. Sorry, I got confused. But there was some generalization to five dimensions, and you can have loop excitations with all the exotic properties. I haven't worked on that, but I suppose there are some generalizations.
So. So has anyone tried to write on the tensor network for those fractal model or any X cube, something like that?
Yeah, so I think after Jouan's work on this RG scheme, there's some study about how to use this branching mirror to write, because of this RG structure, so you have a branching mirror construction for the ground state. I suppose there may be other work for other models.
I mean, I'm not talking about the RG rule. I mean, it's more like a PEPS or MPS in three dimensions. Is that possible?
Sorry, what do you mean?
I mean, like MPS or PEPS in three dimensions, something like that. Do you have something like that?
I'm not aware, but
I don't know if that is trivial or.
It could be interesting to look at. Yeah.
Local stabilizer codes are always packets.
Yeah, you can write it. Yeah. But there are a lot of degeneracy, so you might pick one or find the system size where it's non-degenerate and look at the ground state.
Other questions?
Is it always possible to create the ground state of plankton from the product state by using L square constant depth circuit?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yes, that is a good question. For example, for the X cube model, what's the circuit depth? Well, I guess this RG scheme gives you some idea because.
How about known models?
Huh?
How about known models?
How about what?
Known models, like known all known models, like how. At least if you can construct the ground state from 2D topological order, then it should be L square.
Yeah, let's say if the B system is a there are 2D topological layers, then from there you can find the scaling of the circuit depths. But if the B system is something weird, then I don't know. So for Haskell,
like clouds.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a comment about the circuit depth of creating a certain state. For all these models, you have a linear depth quantum circuit, and this RG flow equation actually immediately proves it. It is an open question whether there exists a gapped ground state whose circuit complexity grows faster than linear time.
Mm-hmm.
That will be very interesting.
What's the degeneracy of the ground space? Is it known how it behaves in fractals?
So for Haskell, it's this crazy formula. But there are certain, for certain system size, it actually looks nice. So this is totally crazy, but for system size, for system size, that's exponential of, so 2 to the something. If L is equal to 2 to the something, then the degeneracy can be just exponential linear in system size, exponential in linear system size. So if you take the log, it's linear in system size. So that's like the, and it's that's the upper bound, the envelope for this crazy function. So maybe there at certain system size, the boundary condition has a nice connection, which allows all the other degenerate states to exist. Otherwise, the boundary condition somehow kills all the other degeneracies.
Any other questions?
Thank you. I'm wondering if the topological behavior of the anion, of the 3D anion here, is maybe linked to the fact that the Sierpinski tetrahedron has a fractal dimension of 2.
Right. So we don't call these anions. We usually call them fractons. Their properties are related to this fractal structure, and in 2D it's Sierpinski carbon, and it is related to the logarithmic energy barrier that you have to overcome in order to separate the excitations. Yes, so in that sense they're related.
So this is related to the fractal dimension in some sense, because
to,
the
to
energy
the fractal
is
structure.
Computed like this.
To the fractal structure
the
also.
Oh,
that it doesn't have to be exactly 2. I suppose there are other models with not dimension exactly 2.
If you would look at these systems at finite temperature, if you would do the thermodynamics, would something unusual pop up?
Yeah, so that's what. And that's what some of the papers studied. I think Joe and Isaac Kim maybe had some earlier paper, and then there's Rahul Nandikshore and people at Boulder. They studied how the low energy excitations have a slow relaxation process. Basically, it leads to some sort of many body localization, but in a model without a disorder.
But like the specific heat on these things?
I don't exactly know. Maybe Isaac or Joanne has a better answer to that. How the specific heat was scale?
As far as I know, the equilibrium thermodynamic properties doesn't really depend on the fractal structure. It's all about dynamics.
Okay. Let's thank Xi again for this great talk.